this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time. Welcome back to Wellness in Dentistry. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Kyle Stanley. I am a dentist, a tech entrepreneur, a speaker, and a researcher. And I'm here with my good friend and your co-host, Dr. Martin Mendelson. He is a disabled dentist, a coach, a speaker, and a thought leader. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. And if this is your first time listening, and if you're not familiar with us, make sure to go to our website, wellnessanddentistry.com. You can check out our respective links for our courses, our websites, our live events, any of the offerings that we have. And we want to thank you for joining us today. Today, we're going to ask the question, do dentists even care? And I know that if you're a dental professional listening right now, you're saying, what the heck, guys? Yeah, of course we care. But this all stemmed from a conversation that I recently had. And so, Martin, this conversation happened. I was talking with a dentist and he was saying, you know, I see so many of my colleagues that just don't care enough. And I think that's their problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it and I said, I don't know many of those dentists.
No.
Now, I think you and I maybe have seen the clinical side of that in our prospective lab experiences, where we may say this doctor doesn't care because they're not placing cord or because they're not prepping well, or they're not taking our time. But still, I think it's hard to judge. For you and I, what I usually see is that dentists care too much.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then overwhelm kicks in and burnout kicks in and all those negative connotations. I also think too that what you look for, you will see, right? So if you're looking for those that don't care, you might find those. If you are looking for those that do, you will. And so look, dentistry is a profession comprised of human beings, right? And so you're going to have the great, the good, the bad, and the ugly within that profession. And that's true of lawyers and physicians and insurance brokers and
construction workers.
Doesn't matter. Like, you know, list every profession there is. So First of all, I think that we can't, you know, take this egoistic high road and think that all dentists are great and do care, because that's not realistic.
True.
While at the same time, I think that yes, the majority of us do truly care. And there's, you know, research from all different types of one. I love quoting all the time that you shared with me about how when we give local anesthetic injections, our blood pressure goes up. Well, obviously, if you didn't care, that wouldn't happen, right?
That's true.
Yeah. And so I think there's also something to be said for not knowing better. And what I mean by that is, like, you made a mention of our respective lab experiences. And so the most favorite clients that I worked with back in the day were the ones that would say to me, how was that? What can I improve, et cetera? And so, and even in that question, they didn't know what they didn't know. So it's, you know, part of it's a growth mindset reality too, right?
So what I see, because I talk about a lot of the negative connotations associated with dentistry on my Instagram and in my courses and stuff, is that the general population thinks that dentists don't care.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I don't know, hype. There's a lot of Instagram reels and TikToks about dentists don't care and we're running this big racket.
Yep.
Which is so crazy, because so many of the dentists that you and I mentor and coach and teach, one of their biggest problems is that they care too much. Now, I know that that sounds bad, right? Why would it be so wrong to care about your profession so much? Like, don't you want the person prepping your tooth to really care about that? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that, because what I mean by caring too much is they care to the point of where they have mental health issues, of where they're going through burnout. They may even be suicidal, because that's all they care about.
Yeah.
They've put their whole, all their eggs in one basket, so to speak. So their whole entire self-worth and their identity is focused in their profession. And what's so crazy is that juxtaposition, right? You have the general population, which is saying, dentists don't care. They're trying to rip us off. All they want to do is, you know, find things in our mouths to make money. And then you have the experience that we see on the dental side, which couldn't be further from the truth.
Yep.
We care so much that we're willing to die.
Yep. Absolutely. And it's interesting too, because I hadn't thought about it in this way before, but even within my own family, this has occurred where one of my brothers called me up and either they had been getting really good care, specialty care, which was needed. And then their general dentist retired. And so then somebody else took over, and basically they both went in and both were told that they needed some pretty significant periodontal therapies, which didn't seem to jive well in their brain. So then they went to their periodontist that they had been seeing all along. And the periodontist was like, "You're fine. It's fine." You know? And so you could look at this from a bunch of different perspectives. And I haven't thought of this before, because think about the perspective of a general dentist that has a practice with a significant patient population with periodontal disease. And so they see, and I'm not saying that my brother's experience was right, wrong, or different, because obviously I wasn't there and I didn't see any of the clinical data, but it brings up an interesting point, which is, even in this area, if you end up caring too much, do you then overdiagnose because you're worried about the long-term implications? Again, not saying right, wrong, or indifferent, but you could make that academic argument, couldn't you?
Yeah, and I think there's a big reel going on right now in dentistry that probably every dentist has seen, where it's someone saying, "I went to my dentist in this city.
Yeah.
He or she said I needed 4 fillings, and I've never had a filling before. And then I went to my dentist in my new city where I just moved or where I was visiting, and he or she said that everything's fine, I don't need anything." And what they got out of that experience was that dentists are running this big racket, and they're trying to find things in our mouths to make money and buy boats and Porsches, right?
Yep.
However, I think all of us dentists can understand how this happens.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just give the example, and I'm going to guess what happened in this scenario. I'm going to guess that this patient, since he said he's never had fillings, I'm going to guess that he has some interproximal decay that has reached the DEJ or is close to reaching the DEJ. Now, there's many frames of thought on this.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will say, let's watch it.
Yep.
Some people will say, let's try to remineralize it with, there's some new peptides on the market. There's things like MI paste, right? Mm-hmm. You have hydroxyapatite. We can try to add in. There's some people that may say, let's go in and do like a micro little filling. Let's do it with air abrasion.
Yep.
And then you have people that are going to do a classic class 2 filling interproximally, right? With whatever material they choose. Every dentist thinks they're right. And, you know, just because you were trained more minimally invasive, or you would rather be more preventative.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to blame the dentist. However, I understand that this person's getting two separate things. You need 4 fillings and you need nothing. All of those dentists care, I think, I would hope.
In my opinion, is actually less about the clinical difference and more about the communication difference.
So true.
Because if those clinicians that, I'll put it in air quotes for those watching on YouTube, diagnosed the lesions that required a restoration, had they been a better communicator, the patient would have, assuming they existed, right? The patient would have been like, "Oh, okay, I understand that. I see that." But what so many do, they don't explain. They just say, "Okay, you need this, 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 and this," and they hand them the treatment plan. And
yes,
the eye goes to the lower right corner of the page, which so many institutions, you know, Spear, Coys, Dawson, Picky, you name it, teach the antithesis of that. And then the patient walks out going, "You know, I've never had these kind of problems before, but oh my gosh, I'm so glad I'm in the right hands." We've heard that too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Because you can have that experience where a great communicator finds these same four lesions.
Yep.
And the patient is so thankful that we're able to treat them minimally invasively, quickly, relatively painlessly, and prevent them from getting larger.
Absolutely.
And so you're so right that it's really the communication. And maybe dentists should be communicating their philosophies more. So when you find a small lesion like that, maybe you show the options and say,
yes.
Listen, many dentists may disagree on this. Let's say I'm the person that wants to do a filling on it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Many dentists disagree on this. These mm-hmm. lesions, we don't really have the scientific recommendations on what works,
yeah.
how fast it'll progress.
Yeah.
And so in my camp and how I was trained, we tend to treat these now in the hopes of preventing them from getting larger and preventing problems. Okay. Now, the other person that, let's say, does the opposite, which is, I just want to watch this.
Sure.
I would think they should say something similar. There's many different opinions on how mm-hmm. these types of lesions should be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Some dentists may want to treat these and try to remineralize them. Some dentists may want to go in and do a filling. I
yep.
happen to be in the camp that I like to wait and watch these
mm-hmm.
because I've seen them on patients and I've watched them over 15 years and sometimes they stay the same. And
Yeah.
now, if you would like to be more preventative, I'd be happy to go in and do a filling, but I'd love to talk to you about this.
100%. And so in large part, what you've described is, you know, some of the basic core spear philosophies, which is take the patient on the tour, on a tour of their mouth with photography, categorize what it is you see as, you know, urgent, you know, versus elective versus something that we're going to watch. We're going to go, look, these are the thing. This is what I found. And, you know, without treatment, this is what may occur, blah, 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 blah. Well, what are we going to do about it? Right. And so when you take a step back and you simply share what it is that you see and then have the conversation as you couch it around your practice philosophy and your recommendations as their treating clinician, that's when people kind of click in and go, oh, okay. Right. And there's going to be some people that are going to be like, I don't want to wait on any. What do you mean wait? I don't want to do that. Let's do it all now. And then there are other people that are going to be like, eh, who knows? You know, I've not had that many problems. Let's wait and see. And all of that's okay. But what you've done in the process through better communication is built a relationship and a presumed loyalty for the future versus the opposite, right? It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal.
And this idea of caring too much, you and I have seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
You and I may have even been there
mm-hmm.
before. I know
yep.
I definitely was.
Yep.
We have different experiences because my burnout was more over time. Your experience was kind of cut
yep.
and dry, happened immediately,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Within weeks
yeah, literally.
Or days.
Yeah.
Do you think that many dentists care too much? And before I let you answer, that's a very general statement, care, right? What do we mean
yeah,
by care?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that.
Yes. And what I tend to mean when I say that care too much, because that can sound like you can never care too much about your patients, is that they will put everything else in their life could be falling apart. As long
yeah.
as their dentistry is okay,
yeah.
they'll still feel like they have this purpose in life.
Yes. And I would say yes. Utilizing that definition explanation, a dentist can absolutely care too much because, as I like to say to my coaching clients, not necessarily clinically, but I'm going to expand it now, people do the best they can with the skills they have at the time. We all do the best clinical procedures that we can do with the skills we have at that time. And so it may sound easy to say, and it's also very true, which is, if you've done the best job that you absolutely could, given all of the variables that exist, the patient couldn't open up, they had excessive saliva, they were on blood thinners, you name it. If we've done the best job that we could possibly do, given the situation, then by continuing to focus on the lack of success, which many people describe as the F word, not the nasty one, but the failure one, it costs us. It costs us sleep. increased cortisol, weight gain. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So the answer is yes. And I think, you know, dental school needed to teach us competence. And so in doing so, it was either pass or fail, good or bad. And life is in the gray. It isn't in the black and white.
Yeah. And so what are some tips and techniques that our colleagues listening to this can do to still be great dental professionals, to still care about their profession, but not at a detriment to their life?
I would say run, don't walk to your bookstore or phone and pick up the book Mindset by Carol Dweck, because that will teach you in a nutshell what I would recommend in answering to your question. Because when something doesn't go right with a patient, you can say, I have failed, or I'm a crappy dentist, versus I failed in this situation. This didn't go well at this time. What can I learn from this for next time? Which would be the growth mindset. And so this applies to everything in life. You know, I was complaining to you over text last night that I couldn't get this social media plug-in thing to work. And I'm guilty of it too. Like, you know, you and I are both human beings as well. I get very frustrated sometimes with certain software things that are supposed to be easy, but don't work. And so I said to myself last night when I caught myself, I'm like, I'm no good at this. I'm like, no. You just missed something. It's not that big of a deal. So fix versus growth. I'm a failure versus I failed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not ascribing your self-worth to your ability to complete XYZ task, gain case acceptance, you name it.
Yeah. And my advice would be to separate your purpose in life from your profession.
Yeah.
Because when you have your whole self-worth aligned with your profession, it's very easy when that crown falls off or the implant fails or whatever, porcelain fractures, that you say, I spent the last 20 years of my life doing this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now I still have problems. I still fail. What the heck is wrong with me? However, when your profession is part of your purpose, meaning you have your purpose that you like to help children, or you are here for the environment, or you want to be a great father, husband, wife, or mother. You have all these different purposes. Mm-hmm. That is just one aspect of your life. And just like how, you know, I think I'm a good driver, but that doesn't mean that I don't get in accidents.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And if I had my whole self-worth aligned with being a good driver, then if I did get in an accident or I ran over a curb, I would feel like an idiot, and I would feel like my purpose in life is flawed.
Yeah.
And so this idea goes back to my whole thought process or framework of a diversified identity strategy, just like how we have a diversified investment strategy.
Yeah.
So if you talk to any good investor, they're not going to say, take all your money and put it all in real estate. Now, real estate can be great, right? I mean, real estate
is
an amazing asset. But if you were 100% in real estate in 2009,
true,
things weren't great, right?
Yeah.
And similarly, if you said, well, put everything in Bitcoin. Well, yeah, Bitcoin was great unless it was whatever, 2022 or whatever, that it went down a lot. Then things sucked for you.
Yeah.
But if you had real estate and Bitcoin and stocks and bonds and, you know, startups that you were invested in, some go up, some go down, and you become recession proof.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how I think about my identity. Is I used to have my identity simply in one area, which was dentistry. My whole identity, my whole purpose in life was to be a dentist, to be the best dentist in the world, to be the best clinical dentist in the world, to have an amazing practice, to make a lot of money. And once I diversified that, now dentistry is still a part of my profession.
Sure.
I still identify with being a dental professional.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also a father. I'm also a husband. I also, you know, enjoy doing sports. I also like charities and helping children. So I become recession proof.
that even if one of my identities falls to the ground, I still have these other four that keep me standing and keep me feeling good about myself.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you were talking too, back to something I said earlier, which is dentists are certainly not unique because we're all human beings. I mean, think about other people that you may know, for those listening in your lives, that, you know, were an executive in some type of business and they, you know, worked really long hours and then they retired and they're like, you know, I don't know who I am. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Or parents that truly created a self-identity around their children. And then when the children went off to college or left home for whatever reason, all of a sudden they're like, I don't know who I am anymore. Why?
You hear that all the time.
Right. Because we've created an identity around something external to ourselves, or exogenous, if I could use that term. So it's an incredibly important thing that we realize. I mean, I sit here and I think about myself. I mean, you know, I had times where I thought I was a dentist and then I wasn't a clinical dentist anymore. I, you know, was associated with Spear for, you know, almost a decade and a half, and I'm no longer doing my own thing. It's like, I can't sit here and connect Martin Mendelsohn with the dentist, with the Spear faculty, with the you know, speaker. You know, I'm coming out with a book. Like, I'm not going to be, you know, I may call, you know, be introduced as, you know, Martin author. I'm going to put it out there in the universe, best-selling author. So see, there I did. But from an identity perspective, I'm not going to do that. I refuse to do that. Now, I've had trauma to teach me that lesson. So allow my trauma to be a lesson for those who hopefully will never go through similar trauma, because it's a hard pill to swallow when you sit back and you think, I'm this. And then all of a sudden overnight, it's literally ripped out from under you.
You're not. And you're such a great example of that. I think what you went through, not very many dentists could go through and come out on the other side as successful and positive as you are.
Yeah.
And if you haven't listened to Martin's story, then go back to our, I don't know, maybe first or second episode when we talked about this. One. But Martin basically lost the ability to practice, physically the ability to practice, with his hand not working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now that I am not practicing, I had that similar identity. Mm-hmm. But I had 7 years of transition.
Yeah, yeah.
You had
yeah.
7 days of yeah. transition.
Yeah, and to make it even worse, at the time, because this was 2003, so the internet wasn't what it is today. There were no smartphones; they didn't exist. So go try to find a job when you're too young for some stuff, too old for others, too inexperienced for some things, too experienced for others. It was. Talk about imposter syndrome. Talk about just like screaming. I talk about it very openly in my book that's coming out, where there was this song out at the time by Heather Small. It was technically a cover. What have you done today to make yourself feel proud? And there were days where I just literally looked for anything that I could do on that day to feel like I accomplished something, because life was miserable. It just, like, I didn't know where I was going to go, what the next turn was going to be, where my long-term income was going to come from outside disability insurance, all that stuff. And so
you had been practicing for how long at that point?
Oh, like 8.5, 9 years at that point.
So you had done college and dental school and residency and, let's say, 9 years of practicing, right?
Well, it goes deeper than that, actually, because I got a job in a dental office at 16 years of age.
Right.
So by the time I became disabled from clinical practice, I had identified with being in dentistry for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, I was the weird kid in high school, like Hermie from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I want to be a dentist. And so it's like all that was ever on my mind. And then it gets ripped away. So this identity thing is real. And I hate, it saddens me to see colleagues get so wrapped up in this. You know, I talked about this the other week, where I have one of my coaching clients that we were working through successfully this mindset around when this individual you know, opens up a tooth and or starts a procedure and it's more difficult. And this person kept saying to themselves, you know, I've been doing this for a couple of decades. Shouldn't this be easier by now? And I looked at them and I went, should it? Like, who said that? Right.
Yeah. You think that eventually it would get easier, right?
Yeah. No.
Yeah. I mean, your story is such a great example of this topic. Do dentists even care? Because I would guess, and I didn't know you at the time, but I would guess that you cared a lot and yeah. you aligned your purpose and mm-hmm. everything in your life with this profession.
Yeah.
And so I do think most dentists care. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I even think that most dentists care too much.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a detriment to their mental and relational health because they yeah. focus so much on this clinical ability and this identity that then what they don't do is learn all these soft skills.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this many times on the podcast, but those soft skills for me is what made me have burnout.
Mm-hmm.
I was a pretty good dentist. Yes, I had complications just like everybody with labs and patients and team members, and I had problems, of course. But where I really lacked was the communication, was mm-hmm. the expectation setting, was the boundary setting.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started learning those, and it was due to my burnout that I started investigating this, then my career took off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I still yeah. cared.
Right.
But I had a little more separation between myself and the practice, myself and the patients.
Yeah.
When I made those boundaries,
mm-hmm.
I still cared.
Yeah.
But I didn't care to the point of my detriment.
Yeah. And you know, you're making me think of kind of a coaching construct, which is not being attached to the outcome. So let me make sure that this is abundantly clear before people get upset with what I just said. I am not saying that we should not be attached to excellent clinical outcomes. What I'm saying is you do your darn best with the skills that you have, the resources that you have, you give it your best, you do your all, and then not be attached to the outcome. There's a difference, right? I'm not saying you shouldn't care. What I'm saying is you should do the absolute best you can. And if we can, pun intended, extract ourselves from that outcome relative to a fixed mindset, thought process, i.e., I'm a failure because this didn't go well, that's when things start to change and your mind opens up to see the opportunity for growth in the future.
And going back to this original story that I was talking to this dentist, telling them that I help doctors with mental and relational health, and them saying, well, I think the problem and why people are having burnout is because they don't care. I pushed back and said, I think that's the opposite. I don't help those people that don't care.
Yeah.
And many times those people that don't care are doing fine. But yeah. I'm saying this in a bad way, meaning they're doing poor work. They're ripping off their patients and they're like, yeah, well, everything, you know, I'm good. Everything's good for me. So they have this other side of the coin.
Yeah.
That I think is in a bad way, right?
Yeah.
The people that you and I help tend to be the doctors that are, you know, Coyce mm-hmm. and Spear and Dawson trained, and they've spent so much time and money and effort to get that last 10 microns on their margin, and they use great labs and they double check and use double core technique to get an amazing margin. But they suffer because of that.
Yeah.
They suffer because they give themselves so much to their profession. Mm-hmm. The people that don't care are probably doing fine.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So I want to make that very yeah. specific case or example to make sure people aren't understanding what we're saying.
Yeah, when I was a senior in dental school, I actually was part-time at a dental practice as an assistant. And I'll never forget, I was, 2 months away from getting my own license? And I'll never forget, they were doing endodontic therapy. And I said, do you want a working length film? Do you have an apex locator? Like, what do you want me to, how do you want me to help you? What do you want me to get set up? Oh no, I don't do any of that. You know, I could just feel the apex. Like, wait, what? And they were happy go lucky and yeah. they were doing their own thing. And so when you were saying that, my mind went back to that situation where I'm thinking to myself, wow, okay, blissful ignorance. Okay, great. So yeah,
that's a great way of saying it, is that blissful ignorance.
Yeah.
I think the doctors that truly don't care. Yeah. What we are trying to do is not be on the extremes, right? Yep. Don't not care,
yep.
But don't care too much to where it grounds you into the ground, or it grinds you into the ground.
Yeah.
Be that doctor that cares enough to help their patients do excellent work, however, still have a life outside of your profession.
So you just made my brain explode. So let's tease this out a little bit, because if you're going to look in the mirror and say to yourself, I really do care, one of the worst things you can do is globalize the opinions about occurrences with your clinical procedures. Because if you really did care, so just work with me here, you would sit back and go, that didn't go well. I'm not going to sit here and beat myself up, but let me think about this procedure from beginning to end, or the treatment plan in its totality from appointment one to whatever, and identify the areas that I can improve. So taking it from a globalistic fixed mindset, catastrophic opinion to, okay, not happy about it, didn't exactly go well. What about it didn't go well? Where is there opportunity for improvement? Where is there, you know, and in some or maybe even many cases, it may be a situation where it's like, you know what, I did do the best I could. And this patient, knowing they had a difficult past dental history, couldn't or wasn't in the place to hear or process what I needed to tell them in a way that created a happy outcome relationship wise. Right.
Yeah. As you're talking about that, I'm making notes and kind of, I'm kind of creating a concept as we're talking through this. Right. And so how I'm thinking about it is, if you have a bell-shaped curve and on the x-axis, you have caring too little on the left side,
and
caring too much on the right side. And on the y-axis, you have wellness. I think we want to bring people from the extremes to the center of that bell-shaped curve. Because they're going to have the most wellness. They're going to care to where they're doing excellent treatment and striving for excellence. However, not by sacrificing their mental health and themselves in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. I think that's cool.
Yeah. I'm going to make this visual because we've talked about a lot today. I think the whole idea was, do dentists even care?
Yep.
Do they care too much? Do they care too little? What does the general public think of us? And how does that impact us too?
Yep.
So what final thoughts do you have?
I think that life is a journey, and happiness is a comparative emotion. And some days are going to be great and some days are going to be just really crappy. And that's what life is all about. And we can't know true joy without knowing true sadness. And we can't know true clinical success without embracing the lack thereof, the antithesis. I won't use the F word. So, you know, in the immortal words of a 70s sitcom theme song, you take the good, you take the bad, you take it all, and there you have the facts of life.
No, that's right. Yeah, my final thoughts with this would just be, make sure that we're separating our purpose from our profession.
Yeah.
Make sure that your profession is part of your life, but it is not your life.
Yep.
And learn from my mistakes and many others, and you know, Martin's as well, that when you love and are passionate about your profession, that can be a good thing and that can be a bad thing. It just depends on how much it owns you.
Yeah.
So make sure that you own your profession. You tell your profession what happens, and not the other way around. Because when you become this slave to dentistry and your whole life is encompassed in dentistry, it can lead to a downfall.
Yeah.
And like me, you know, a lot of my friends are dentists. Of course, I'm speaking all the time. I'm advising dental tech companies. I mean, my whole, every single day is at least 8 hours of dentistry, right?
Yeah.
But I also turn off at the end of the day, and I'm not a dentist when I'm with my kids and when I'm at the park or I'm at the beach. And that brings me that balance. And I think that brings me closer to the middle of that bell-shaped curve that I described earlier.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I hadn't thought about this in a long time, but I've had a lot of people, particularly in the last, since I became disabled, that will look at me and say, "You don't strike me as the typical dentist." And I'm like, "Well, I'm kind of not." And I just wonder, if it isn't some of a lot of what we've talked about in terms of not, you know, creating that as my identity, right?
So. Yeah. Well, everybody, I hope that you enjoyed this episode, and we thank you for your continued support in listening and sharing and liking things on Instagram for us or on TikTok or on LinkedIn. Martin and I are really on a mission to bring this topic of wellness and dentistry to the masses, you know, through this podcast, free of charge. Now, of course, we do have our online courses, our in-person workshops. You know, Martin can be your coach. You can bring us in to do workshops. So if you want to support us, that is the best way to do it. You can just go to wellnessanddentistry.com, click on our links, bring us out, find a way to support us. We really appreciate that. And lastly, if you haven't written a written review on iTunes, and that's where you're listening, please do that. That would really help us. And we thank you so much for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. Bye-bye. Okay.